You're listening to Drive on ABC Radio.
Time magazine published a list of the 100 most influential people in the world. This year, amid world leaders like Joe Biden and Xi Jinping and the odd royal, is an Australian scientist. Professor Lydia Maraska from the Queensland University of Technology is being recognised by Time for her research in the role of aerosol transmission in COVID-19, as well as her tireless advocacy in convincing the World Health Organization and other influential institutions to recognize the role this plays in spreading the virus. Her work has helped change practices everywhere, from schools to workplaces, making these environments safer for people around the world. Her advice has literally saved lives. Professor Lydia Maraska is the director of the International Laboratory of Air Quality and Health at Queensland University of Technology, and she joins us here on Drive. Professor, congratulations and thanks for talking to me.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me on the program.
This has been quite a fight for you, a surprisingly arduous fight, actually, to get the world to pay attention to something we now regard as obvious.
Oh, indeed. It's been a very big fight, but I wouldn't say that we now consider this obvious. Have you heard any recommendation from any state or national public health authorities advising about the need of ventilation? This still hasn't happened yet, and it's still a long battle which we have to fight. But overall, in general, the wheel started to turning in the right direction, and hopefully in not too long, we'll be looking differently at our indoor air quality.
Hmm. Your passion began with a tweet from the World Health Organization, which said, "This virus is not airborne."
Yes, I wouldn't probably say that this was passion. This was something more. That was determination to correct this thing. I've worked in this field of infection transmission from the point of view of being a physicist, and I'm talking about the particles generated from human respiratory activities when we breathe, when we speak, understanding what happens to them, how they are transported in the indoor environment. I worked in this field since SARS-1, 2003. But when I've heard this statement in March last year from the WHO that the virus is not airborne, I said something really seriously had to be done about this.
Mm. Because I think we all remember that time, don't we? Obviously, it's still important to wash your hands and it's still important to spray down surfaces. But we were told that that was the kind of main thing back then, weren't we? And it's not really true.
Well, that's right. I remember the big signs here above the roads in Brisbane, in Queensland, saying "Wash hands, save lives." Of course, it's important to wash hands, but this won't save lives from COVID, because SARS-CoV-2 is in the air. We inhale it, so the most important is to prevent its inhalation, not that much cleaning our hands.
Hmm. I mean, did you always know this about SARS, or is it something you found out by studying the thing?
This is a respiratory virus. It behaves in terms of the physics of this, what happens with it once it's emitted from our mouth and nose like any other viruses. When we, as I said, when we speak, when we breathe, we generate these little particles, liquid particles. And if we are infected in these liquid particles, there's the virus. And it's in the air. So it's no different mechanism to any other viruses. That's how SARS-1 also behaved. So this is not a big discovery that it behaves like other viruses.
It's more what we do with that knowledge. Obviously, your knowledge, the things that you're telling us make it ever more important that we wear masks. But you're also saying we should be paying much more attention to ventilation within buildings.
Because by ventilation, we remove the virus from the air. The less virus in the air, the lower the chance or the lower the risk of infection. So it's like controlling any emission source. Remove the pollutant from the air. Ventilation is what it does. So that's why it's absolutely critical to do this. Of course, masks are important because masks also control the emission of the virus by the infected person, or inhalation by a person wearing the mask. But still, masks don't protect us completely. Mm-hmm. Sometimes doesn't offer much protection if the masks are not properly fitted. So still the issue is not to have the virus in the air. Or if you go for dinner to a restaurant, you are not wearing a mask at all. If the virus is there for 2 hours of, say, dinner, there's a big risk.
Mm. So what's the answer to that? Is it simply open windows in school classrooms, in restaurants or whatever, or is it a sort of technological solution where you have air conditioning systems that pull the air out?
There are lots of technological solutions. We are saying that in the most simplistic terms, it is open the window if you have the window. And in many cases, this indeed solves the problem. But of course, this is just a simplistic way of putting this, because when it is cold or when it's too hot, you don't want to have the window open because you want the air be cleaned or the air be cooled down. So we are talking about emergency measures now, ad hoc measures during the pandemic, do whatever it's possible to lower the virus concentration in the air. But in the longer term, we really should rethink how we design our buildings, how we operate them, so we lower the concentration of the virus. At the same time, when necessary, we prevent the ingress of air pollution, like during bushfires. And we do all this in energy efficient manner. So this, it's not the technologies are not there. Technologies are there. We just need to want to do this.
Mm. And it's so frustrating, isn't it? Because so many of us work in, I can't open the building, the window here, you know, it's they're all fixed shut in most modern offices. They are all hotels you go to. It's impossible to open the window, isn't it?
Well, that's right. And in the climate we have, where for a good part of the year we can have windows open and have natural air with minimum energy consumption, this would be an ideal solution. But this would require a more sophisticated design of the building so it can use natural ventilation when appropriate and to an extent appropriate. However, have mechanical ventilation to be used when necessary.
Yeah, we're talking to Professor Lydia Maraska, who's the Director of the International Laboratory for Air Quality and Health at the University of Technology in Queensland, and today has been named by Time magazine as one of the 100 most influential people on the planet because of her advocacy of this, not only her knowledge of it, but the way she's gone out and really insisted that people understand the importance of transmission through the air with COVID. We talked about this a few weeks ago, Lydia, with another scientist and who was saying similar things. And a lot of listeners rang up, particularly people who'd been nurses maybe back in the 1960s, and were saying how the benefits of air have been known for a long time. One of them even mentioned Florence Nightingale, you know, to get a patient out in fresh air, to have a baby and give it a sun bath was the traditional phrase. Air is good for us. We've always known that. Fresh air is great.
That's exactly right. This is not something new. This is not a discovery. We just went away from fresh air, from clean air, from ventilation, and making the designs of the building not considering these factors. Actually, in many situations, like we observe here now in Queensland, there are building measures taken, for example, to prevent falls, which basically block the windows. There are other ways of doing this. Perhaps slightly more expensive, but not much. But it's better from the way it is perceived to make it a little bit cheaper, block the windows and prevent ventilation. Well, what can I say?
Yes, yes. In the 18 months that you've been doing this battle, really, to talk people around, to convince them of the science, what's been the toughest moment? Have you faced lots of naysayers?
The most difficult probably were the first few months. At the very end of March last year, I assembled the group, which is called the Group of 36, to talk to the WHO and to make them to change the recommendation and change that wording that the virus is not airborne. So that was at the very beginning of April when we had the first conversation with the WHO, which didn't really achieve much. And since then, we've been trying somehow to publish this, to announce this, to make this known. And this was extremely difficult because we knew that it had to be published in a top journal. So WHO and other health authorities listened to this, but the some top journals didn't want to publish this. So it wasn't until at the beginning of July this paper was published, called Open Letter, was published in the Journal of Clinical Infection Diseases. That's where things started changing. But this time between the beginning of April until the beginning of July was the most difficult.
Yeah, well, you kept on going, and now everyone sees it your way. They're not particularly doing what you say in terms of ventilation, but at least the basic science of it is now understood. And, yeah, how does it feel to be one of the 100 most influential people in the world? You didn't get to be on the cover, Lydia. I have to break that to you. That was Harry and Meghan, but you did get on the list.
Well, it feels a bit unreal, but I see it like, well, it's me, I'm acknowledged there, but it's really the cause I'm after. And this being this acknowledged, hopefully, will make people listen more to what I'm advocating for.
Yeah, well, let's hope. You've one of those people who's really already saved a lot of lives through your science. Thank you so much for talking to me.
Thanks for having me on the program.
Yes, Professor Lydia Maraska, who has been included as one of the most 100 most influential people on the planet by Time magazine, alongside President Xi and all those sort of people, and Harry and Meghan, who were on the cover. She's the director of the International Laboratory at the Queensland University of Technology in Queensland.
You're with ABC Radio.